Happy Friday, everybody. It's the Information's 411, your weekly look at the stories that we've published in the last couple of days, other items in the news that we feel fit to comment on. My name is Tom Dotun. I am a reporter here at the Information. Today, we've got two parts of the episode. First off, I am talking to Bijoli Shah about cable versus streaming and what it's like inside these big media companies as they make this kind of seismic shift away from being, you know, very focused on the business that their cable spits out into streaming. Streaming is obviously very new to these companies, something that isn't likely to produce profits for a while, whereas cable is old and extremely profitable but declining. And that causes cultural issues, a lot of challenges business-wise and how you balance the two sides. And that was the story that Bijoli and I published this week, so excited to get to that conversation. And then I'm also talking to Corey Weinberg about Airbnb and some interesting strategies that they may be pursuing on the content side, and then also some executive shakeups that have happened recently. Nothing to plug this week. Thanks so much for everyone that came out to our event in LA last week. A lot more coming for you in 2020, but that's actually it for us event-wise. So thank you so much to everyone who joined us at the various events that we did throughout the year. All right, let's get on over to Bijoli. All right, Bijoli, so you and I worked on an interesting story this week that looked at the kind of changing dynamics inside media companies where the cable side, which has historically been and remains the profit center of these companies, has suddenly become kind of secondary to streaming, which is an upstart thing, but also where all the energy and effort is going. So I guess just starting off with it, I mean, what had you, like what made you interested in this topic? Like why start to delve into kind of the future of cable when it's very clear that these companies are, you know, branching out elsewhere?
So one, I still subscribe to cable, so I have a very vested financial interest in the programming strategy. I realize that's a losing bet, and that's not what you asked about my media budget.
No, it's good to know.
Well, I think the bigger reason is that, you know, as someone who still has cable, everyone's been approaching it really differently. On one hand, you have NBC Universal, which is owned by Comcast, and they have gone the strategy of let's start closing some of our more niche cable channels and try to make what money we can on our flagship ones. Then you have a company like Disney, which as of very recently has shown a willingness to move some of its really top tier programming from a cable channel like FX, which it just picked up in its merger with 20th, to move that programming onto Hulu. So, you know, they've taken a different strategy, which is don't deprogram the cable channels, but there's a little bit of fluidity. You know, Warner Media has done a tiny bit of that, but then you have Viacom CBS, which is operating dozens of cable channels, you know, MTV 1 through 7. Probably a little bit of an exaggeration, but, you know.
Right. They're still pumped about cable to a degree, maybe more so than Disney is. But the interesting thing about it, and Disney is always kind of the center of these conversations, is that at the same time that Disney is made it very clear they're going all in and, you know, pushing a lot of great FX shows apparently to Hulu, they also are, like, in buying Fox, more invested than cable than they've ever been. So, I mean, do you think there's kind of this difficult balancing act that these companies are trying to manage, whereas in one sense they can't really just abandon cable because that's still where their money comes from, but they have to push all their best stuff onto streaming because they need to make it a compelling offering?
Yes, definitely. And I mean, I think you said it best. Cable still makes a ton of money. And you look at a company like Disney, and Bob Iger did tell people at their analyst day earlier this year that the company is over the next few years going to take a pretty big loss, which you have to read between the lines and assume that that means some of those losses will likely come from cable. But, you know, I think Disney is a perfect example. They're not a company that has to be in the cable business. You know, they don't have the issue of Comcast where they're still cable operators, so you can't turn your back on it entirely. And yet they still choose to stay in cable. To me, that shows that there's, I mean, still some significant upside for them to stay in the business, even despite the fact that they have two streaming services that they need.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. Sure. I mean, like with Disney, like the streaming service is something that's going to position them for the future. You know, they recognize like the trends within cable, but we also are living in the present. And in the present, Disney has a huge number of cable channels, probably the most, you know, the heftiest bundle of any of them. And like ESPN, though it's declining, still rules the roost. It's still like this huge profit center. When you talk to people as you were doing this story, though, and I can speak maybe to my experience as well, like, did you get a sense that the cable people are starting to feel like, as we say in the story, second class citizens, that even though they're the profit centers, they're just not the cool kids anymore?
Yes, I definitely got that sense. And, you know, again, a lot of it is that some of them are seeing their literal jobs being taken away. There's been a lot of consolidation, especially in the entertainment-focused cable channel companies like Comcast and, you know, we talked about NBC Universal. But at Disney, you're seeing, as we talked about in our article, real philosophical fights about what type of programming goes on the cable channel, what's held back for the streaming service. You know, Disney has started to pull off some of the reruns from the Disney Channel library that were available through the on-demand platform Disney Now, migrate those to the streaming service. So if you're an employee in cable, I've got to feel like the writing is on the wall a little bit for you, and that's probably not fun.
Yeah, yeah, not even a little bit. I mean, you have this anecdote in the story about NBC Universal closing some of, you know, their niche channels, ones that clearly weren't getting that much traction.
I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of what we're seeing companies like Warner Media do, which is up the amount of unscripted programming, up the amount of live programming, I think condition their cable viewers toward, you know, this programming that's easier to produce, a little bit cheaper, you know, sports and those sorts of live programming are things that are must-see still,
right,
rather than the type of stuff you stream. So I do wonder if we'll start to see that as a middle ground rather than seeing people give up the ghost entirely.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. I think sports will remain a driver of people to maintain their cable subscriptions. And maybe that's your reason too, to still having, you know, a subscription to the bundle. Yeah. But
I live in Los Angeles. It's hard to watch the Lakers, so I have cable.
Right.
But even, you know, as I'm watching these channels, I'm seeing a lot more. If you look at NBC, there's a lot more unscripted programming on it. Networks, you know, and we are seeing a willingness at all of these companies to move some of their best scripted cable shows onto the streaming services.
Right.
So it kind of feels like people are rearranging deck chairs.
Yeah.
More than
for the cable side. Yeah.
A path forward for the cable industry.
Right. And you know, like if you're a cable watcher, you're not thrilled. It's not like finally I'm getting all the unscripted shows that I've been dying for to, like, you know, fill up the slate. This is a matter of, you know, maintaining costs while still having enough programs that you can have a functional 24/7 cable channel. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few years if that becomes the norm. If every cable channel that's not having sports just ends up with a bunch of unscripted stuff, or kind of second, third tier shows, and all the best stuff goes to cable. One, how many people still want to stick around for that? And two, you know, how many of the cable distributors, you know, your Comcast, your Charters, your whatever, are going to say, yeah, I still want to pay top dollar to carry these channels when there's less and less good stuff on it? I mean, that to me is like the big question, right?
Exactly. And I mean, one of the consultants that we had quoted in the article brought up that point that on one hand, these companies like NBC are able to, in this moment, charge the cable operators higher, but they're charging more money for these shrinking bundles. And, you know, as we've reported, not you and I, but as our colleague Jessica reported, we're seeing a lot of these cable operators potentially think about getting out of video entirely. So there's a lot of rubber hitting the road on multiple sides of this issue. Which right. I think is going to be really interesting.
Right. Well, Bijoli, as the maybe one of the last millennials still paying for the bundle, I thank you for your expertise on this topic, and thanks for joining.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right, you just heard that music, so you know that it is time for Airbnb Update with our Airbnb correspondent, Corey Weinberg. Corey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. That's a new title. I love it.
Yeah, so let's just get right down to brass tacks here. A lot going on in the Airbnb world, starting off with the news that came out this morning that Belinda Johnson, the COO, is stepping down. Corey, your thoughts? Sorry, we can calm it down. We can go podcast speed.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. So Belinda, what are your thoughts on the fact that, you know, the COO is stepping down, looks like they want to go public next year?
It's both surprising and not surprising at the same time, I think. You know, listen, she was one of the sort of closest executives to CEO Brian Chesky. Multiple people that I've talked to today kind of characterized her as the Brian whisperer. You know, Brian is a very, Chesky is known to be, you know, a huge sort of extrovert, storyteller, even emotional sometimes. Belinda Johnson, more analytical in nature, has had to manage a lot of egos inside the company, and really has been elevated over the years from Airbnb's top lawyer to now the chief operating officer, in a kind of an atypical COO role in which she oversaw policy, comms, trust and safety, customer service. Not like a, you know, so it's a big loss for the company, but, you know, I think it's also a signal that they're going to continue to bring in more experienced big company executives like they have been doing.
So I understand we're probably in the realm of speculation here than anything you can independently confirm, but does this strike you as something that was planned, that she was always, you know, going to be someone that stepped down in advance of an IPO, or this is unexpected and kind of puts the leadership in a bit of a, you know, I don't want to say turmoil, but, you know, a situation where they really need to solidify this going to the market next year?
For sure. The public narrative that the company has put out there to employees and to the rest of the world is both a, you know, is mostly a Johnson is burnt out, essentially, and needs to spend more time with their family. Now, right. We're both, I'm sure, skeptical of the...
But why not go into the IPO? I mean, you hear that a lot. I remember covering Snap and through that process, and I would hear a lot from people at the company saying, like, you know, I just need to get through this IPO.
For sure.
Get through the first quarter, and then I'm out.
I mean, it's possible that the IPO is not going to happen until Q3.
Right.
So
that's a long time
we
away.
Might be farther off than we know. I mean, the company is going through the motions right now, doing all the things you do, hiring bankers, IR firms, PR firms to get ready to go public. We just don't have a solid sense of timing right now, and it might not be January or February. So if that's the case, she may not want to stay, you know, all the way through the next, you know, through the IPO and get, you know, her replacement in place, which they're not hiring. They're apparently not hiring another COO. They're hiring a vice president of operations. So, you know, we'll see.
And that's not unheard of too. You don't necessarily need one.
No, you don't. And I think COO sort of falls in and out of favor. They also, Airbnb doesn't have a chief marketing officer either. You know, they are fairly comfortable, it seems like, in the past going with the atypical leadership team. Now, I've independently confirmed that Belinda Johnson has been telling people for a few months now that family sort of reasons have sort of piled up for her to have a good reason to sort of want to spend more time away from the Airbnb sort of executive team. She is being added to the board, I should add, the board of directors. So she's staying sort of within the company.
Which I guess would maybe... Well, I don't know. I guess you can speculate one way or the other, but at the very least, it wasn't any sort of a falling out that precluded
certainly not
any
a
kind of relationship.
Certainly not
Airbnb
a falling out between her and Brian Chesky. Okay. I think he would sort of burn the whole place down before getting rid of her. It's that tight of a bond. However, I will say that it's very clear if you just look at what we've reported sort of around the sort of large number of losses that the company has been taking on in the first half of this year. It went from a company in the first half of last year where it was losing about $100-150 million to now losing about $400 million in the first half of this year. Some of that is planned losses, but I think it's also becoming clearer that the company is getting bigger, more complicated, and will need to sort of really figure out how to get its spending under control if it's going to go into a public offering with the story of, you know, we are a rare example of a money-making,
we're one of the good guys,
mega unicorn.
You know, we've seen the markets react unfavorably to companies like WeWork and others that are just losing massive amounts of cash. Obviously, Uber and Lyft haven't had a great time in the market. So Airbnb struck me as the one that could tell a slightly different narrative. If you want to back a tech company that isn't just a money inferno, we're your guys, girls.
Totally. And I think it's what investors, I think, will be trying to understand is, will Airbnb be able to level up and be a company that was more than just one that had a great business model, great, you know, sort of customer demand, you know, in the first decade of its life, and be able to, you know, sort of add to that efficiently and right. add more business lines, execute on sort of policy goals, execute on experiences in China and all the other kind of things they want to add on to the core business. And that just means the business is getting more complicated, and there's just going to continue to be, I think, sort of a question of the right leadership going forward.
Right. And so you mentioned a couple of initiatives, and I do want to circle back to that at the end of this chat, because firstly, you did mention policy stuff. So that's been like a, you know, ongoing stumbling block yeah. for Airbnb. It seems to flare up every couple of months when certain politicians and cities
yeah.
work to regulate them, ban them, whatever it is. What's the latest on the Airbnb policy front?
Yeah, you're right. This is something this has been, you know, number one or number two risk for Airbnb for years. This is nothing new. I think what investors and other folks are kind of getting antsy about as Airbnb gets closer to going public is sort of where is it, how is it faring in New York? That's, you know, one of the biggest tourist destinations in the world.
You can make it there.
If you can make it in New York, you know, concrete
jungle. You really
jungle.
Made it. That's how they say it. You can exactly. make it here, you've done it, boy.
Yeah, and I think one worrying sign was the fact that it lost, the Airbnb spent big to try to win a sort of ballot referendum in Jersey City earlier this month and lost in a pretty significant landslide. And that loss essentially restricts their business in a key market, you know, adjacent to New York. And New York itself is long been in sort of this regulatory gray area, and Airbnb hasn't been able to win over hotel unions and other sort of opponents in New York. So, you know, it's always going to be an issue for Airbnb. They have wins, they have losses. I think right now, what I think people are going to want to understand is, are they winning more than they're losing, or are they losing more than they're winning? And, you know, that was a Belinda Johnson sort of place she oversaw the policy team. I haven't been able to independently say that, you know, she, you know, sort of the any kind of policy related losses
weighed in her decision
to leave.
Sure.
But I think, you know, the question, we should raise the question, and we should be watching this going forward.
Yeah, and I imagine it'll be interesting to see the effect that the presidential campaign has next year and the kind of rhetoric coming out of, I would imagine, mostly the Democratic side, depending on who the nominee is, about, you know, the relationship between government and tech. And if we're seeing what we've seen in the past couple of months, which is a lot of people kind of on the left taking a very adversarial approach to tech companies, you know, taking pride in the fact that Amazon pulled out of going to New York, and
right.
You know, the fact that Amazon lost a kind of embarrassing battle in Seattle for a town council position or a city council position, you know, that could affect Airbnb too, right? You know, like if we're seeing a climate that's very pro-regulation and anti-tech, then Airbnb is kind of lying to the street that they've got this regulation policy stuff figured out just seems kind of weak.
It could, you know, they benefit from the fact that their relationship with the, you know, kind of labor force, if you will, is not as contested as like an Uber. You know, like the people that they rely on to sort of put their homes on Airbnb are like a little bit more middle to upper middle class to upper class. But I think the thing that will, you know, always continues to crop up is, you know, they have two main opponents. One is a group of people that worry that Airbnb's popularity is taking away housing supply for long-term residents in cities. And another is from hotel unions, which fear that Airbnb's popularity sort of squeezes the, you know, sort of ability for hotels' own businesses to thrive, right. which then hurts workers. So right. they have the mix of people to try to win over, and it's not going to go away. Now, the question is just, is this going to, you know, are they going to be able to manage regulatory risk?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just something that will be built into the price, I imagine, and built into its kind of future, its projections. All right. Last thing here, and a little on the fun side. Airbnb, many initiatives. You mentioned experiences. Brian Chesky, big ideas guy.
Big ideas guy.
Yeah, he's talked about buying airlines in the past.
And he loves himself like, you know, a good, like any good tech executive. Yeah. He loves himself some.
Listen,
like Steve
when
Jobs.
You're a man running a business that has an infinite horizon, there's a lot of things that can dot that horizon.
Totally.
So part of that has apparently been a desire to go into the content business, get in on peak television. And this was first reported elsewhere. We, you know, give credit to Reuters for initially breaking the story, though, you know, you guys, or we here advanced the story a bit this week. And it sounds like we have a bit more details on what Airbnb thinks their original content play is going
to
be.
Yeah, the big story we wrote this week, credit to Jessica Tunkel on the information's team for...
And Bajoli Shaw.
And Bajoli Shaw for really leading that story. But yeah, Airbnb has been on the hunt in Hollywood for someone to lead a division that would focus on television programming and in general, and generally sort of spearhead a broader content effort. They see, you know, sort of a world in which big brands are creating their own content, you know, producing TV shows as, you know, the future of their business. Travel has always been an industry dependent heavily on marketing, and I think Airbnb wants to think big in that regard. I think obviously the big risk and where people criticize this is, are they getting out over their skis?
Right.
Are they... are they getting into an initiative that is going to be far too expensive and far too much for them to bite off? And
right.
They're clearly looking for a leader to sort of guide them in that way. But so that to me would point that, hey, this actually might be a priority for the company, which will, I think, be kind of have mixed reaction from the street. And
yeah, we'll see how big an investment it really is. Right. I mean, it seems like there's a lot still to be determined. And
yeah,
depending on who they choose for it and, you know, what the nature of their investment is. I think we'll say a lot about whether people really care about this or this is just like a passion project that sort of goes away, you know, if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Hey, I think you're right. I think with a lot of these Airbnb initiatives, time will tell, as we like to say in the business.
Yes.
But I think in particular, they'll need to sort of really shore up in the next 6 months or so before they go public. You know, what are the stories they really want to point to beyond the fact that, you know, their core business generally produces a good amount of cash. But, you know, how are they going to sort of grow on top of that?
Right.
It's still a little bit hazy.
Right. Maybe their first show can just be Airbnb's, you know, trip and going public. And, you know, kind of behind the scenes, a real kind of meta look at the company as yeah. it takes its next step.
Yeah, I hope I hope they interview me.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. We'll follow up with you on that. All right, Corey, thanks for joining.
Thank you.